Hey there, everybody. It is Nick Bradley here. Welcome to Scale Up for another week. And joining me on the show today is a good friend of mine, Callum Lang. Now, I'm not going to steal the thunder of our conversation by going into how we met, how we initially met, but let's just say it was quite a funny situation. But what's happened since then is we have grown an appreciation for each other's areas of expertise. And the thing I like about Callum is he's involved in multiple businesses. He sits on multiple boards. He's worked for private companies, public companies. He's written three best-selling books all about entrepreneurship and investing. In fact, one of his excellent books is around a concept called agglomeration. So if you're looking to kind of scale and exit your business into the public markets, that's something that you should definitely read. But today we're going to talk about boards, boardrooms, and specifically getting a board seat. And I love this topic for two reasons, actually. We haven't covered it really on the show before, but in my days of private equity, I was astounded, and I'm still astounded, by how ineffective boards can be. Now, you see, the traditional way of building a board, and again, we're going to get into this in the conversation, is it's kind of like, you know, an old bloke's network, you know, secret handshakes and who knows who. It's not always about what the board needs and diversity on the board and some of those things that are really powerful and help a company grow and scale and become valuable. And that's what it should be about, but it hasn't traditionally been about that. And what Callum has done is decided to challenge that. He's decided to write a book, which is called The Boardroom Blueprint. And it's there to help people who have the expertise, who have the knowledge, but may not have got the opportunity to sit on a board to be able to do that. So today's topic is all around that. How do you get on a board? What does it mean to have an effective board? What does an effective board do to a company when it's operating well? And equally, what does an ineffective board do if it's not operating well, and how can you change that? So we're going to go deep into all of those topics today and more. And, you know, I know you're going to love this, particularly if you have a business and you're thinking about hiring someone to be on that board, maybe your first board, your advisory board, or if you're transitioning to a portfolio career and, you know, you want to get on a board for the first time.
You know, look, I think the biggest thing for people to get their heads around is agreeing to work for free. And I keep pointing out it's not for free, it's for credibility.
So sit back, relax, grab a coffee, grab a tea, get the pen and the notepad out and enjoy this episode. Welcome to Scale Up with Nick Bradley, Callum Lang. Hey everybody, it is Nick Bradley here. Welcome to this week's episode of Scale Up. And I'm delighted to say that I have a friend on the show today. I'll tell you the story of how we met in a second. It's quite fun. And also the fact that we're going to have a topic today that is crucial in certainly my world, certainly when you start to build a company that's valuable to be exited. And it's a topic that we haven't covered on the show before in any detail. And Callum is an expert in this space. So firstly, welcome Callum Lang to the show. Welcome.
Thank you, Nick. It's a pleasure. We've been talking about this for some time, so it's glad we finally got our diaries aligned.
I know, crazily. And then I did some stuff for your community as well around private equity recently as well, so it's good to collaborate on here. And our topic today, crucially, is the boardroom. You know, what is the boardroom? What does it take to be someone who is on the board of a company? And importantly, why it's a big opportunity for people, I think, certainly to progress their careers, but also to help companies be able to go through the different stages of growth and certainly value and exit. So very keen to get into that. Before we start, so how do we meet? Do you want to tell the story? I like the way you tell the story.
This is the when I was speaking on stage and we met, like we went for coffee at the same time just before I went on stage, and I discovered you were private equity, and I had about two or three slides in my presentation absolutely eviscerating private equity, and I the room was supposed to be full of entrepreneurs. I wasn't expecting anyone from PE to be in there, so once you'd introduced yourself, I did sort of apologize in advance in case I offended you. And remember. Then went on, did the presentation. And I just remember you coming up to me afterwards going, Yeah, that was bad, but you don't know half of it. It gets far worse than that.
And a friendship was born from that. It was funny actually,
Exactly.
because I do remember you coming up. We were just chatting at coffee, and you obviously assumed at that point in time that I was a private equity guy. And I suppose at that point when we met, it was a number of years ago now, certainly 4 or 5 years ago, I was still involved heavily in the private equity firms. In fact, I was working with one specifically when I was at that event. But what you didn't know is that I was transitioning out of that. And because of all the toxic things that go on, and I've talked about that a lot on the show, I was actually looking for a different path. So when you presented and talked about what you guys were doing, it was a great education for me, because in private equity, we're quite structured and in our lane. And you were talking about agglomeration and different types of businesses and how you can roll them together and then list. And that sort of stuff is not the normal conversations we had. So one question for you. You didn't remove any slides, did you, after you spoke to me?
Oh, I added two more.
Awesome. So for people who don't know who you are, I was actually just reading a little bit of your book beforehand. There's a couple of things that jumped out. The first, when it sort of says, who is Callum Lang? You start off by saying it's 3 a.m. in New York and the head of the NASDAQ has been woken up to call you personally to apologize for a critical mistake that they'd made on the day that you were supposed to take your company public. Let's start there.
I'm afraid I can't. I've signed an NDA.
There you go.
Yeah, so that was 2016, and that was my first experience sitting on the board of a public company. And actually, it was one of those really dumb little admin errors, but it meant that our big launch day got pushed back 24 hours, and it was the first time in NASDAQ history that had ever happened. So hence the guy being woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning to phone and apologize. But yeah, that was, and of course, I mean, the public markets, you have, even when you're a very small company, there's a lot of people watching you, there's a lot of scrutiny. And so when everyone's expecting your stock ticker to appear at 9 a.m. and it doesn't, and it says you've been suspended before you've even got started. It's
Oh, God.
you can imagine, it was just that day was just dealing with investors and friends, and I just everyone wants to know what was going on. And it was yeah, it was quite a baptism of fire into public company boardroom.
So not your best day, obviously. And I mean, you joke about saying that one of the worst things that happened is the champagne got really warm.
Couldn't have really been on at 8 in the morning anyway,
Well,
but
there you go. But yeah, it's funny because I get asked the question a lot about, when I talk about different exits with people, I tend to favor, financial exits to private equity or strategic exits to sort of, companies, so they can be listed companies. But sometimes people come to me and say, hey, I want to build my company, I want to list it. And I often say, I said, listen, there's easier ways to do it, right? There are easier ways to do it. It just depends. But I commend your bravery. And since then, you've been involved in a lot more of this stuff. So let's get a little bit more into kind of who you are, Callum. So before that, what was your kind of first foray into entrepreneurship? And then sort of take us briefly through the journey to where you are today.
yeah, so been sort of hustling and starting little ventures for a long time. I think my first sort of grown up business was at the height of the dot-com boom. I was a set up a recruitment agency, placing IP engineers into telcos around Europe, which was hugely profitable and definitely right time, right place. And ever since then, I've been sort of building businesses. I moved out to Asia about 20 years ago because I read that there was the largest transfer of wealth in history from west to east, and as a young entrepreneur, it seemed to make sense to be on the receiving end of that equation. And yeah, just kept building businesses. Met with a gentleman called Jeremy Harbour that you know well, and he and I became partners about 10 years ago, with this idea of taking owner-operated businesses, putting them into groups, and taking the group public, and then bringing more companies in. But the real sort of big distinction from, say, private equity or the others that do these roll-up and lists was that we weren't trying to take control away from the businesses. So the business owners, these are typically older economy, 20, 25-year-old businesses, the founders would stay in place and keep their brand and their culture and everything the same. but within this envelope of a publicly listed company. So it just made it much easier for them to win bigger contracts. They could have stock options for their staff, do their own acquisitions. So yeah, that's what we sort of spent the last decade or so doing. We have seven publicly listed companies around the world now, groups of companies, and we do about one transaction a month into one or other of those companies.
Right. Yeah. No, because that's where we first met. I was actually one of your events with Jeremy, hearing about that for the first time, which, to be frank, actually sparked me quite a lot on what I ended up or what I do now. Because then I got connected to Carl Allen, who you know well. He's a good friend of mine. We've done a lot of stuff together. I spoke on his stage recently in Atlanta. And actually, a lot of people who go through the Harbor Club or go through Carl's work, who have then built something and they're still evaluating their exit plans, end up coming to me, which is quite nice the way that's all sort of developed over time. But I take it through that journey, of course, and the governance, the compliance, the rigor, all those sort of things. You know, you've been exposed to the good and, let's say, the bad of how businesses are run, which takes us to kind of today's conversation. So let's talk about that a little bit. What was this fascination with trying to, I suppose, improve, get more people involved in boards and board governance?
Yes, the fascination with boards sounds like the most boring thing ever, doesn't it? But
Yes.
I think so what I discovered was a few things kind of came together over the last few years. So first of all, when I was a young and very ambitious entrepreneur, even like 20 plus years ago, I always thought, God, would it be so good if I could get onto the board of somebody else's company so I could see what was going on and I get those connections and get all of that learning. But I just didn't know how you go about it. I didn't really know what went on in these board meetings. There's no information out there. I mean, even today, there's very little information about what goes on in these boards, how you get a board seat. So that was kind of one piece of it. Another piece was very early on in my entrepreneurial career, when I realized that I was my own boss and I wasn't a very good one, I started building advisory boards around myself. So not, and I didn't even know the terminology of an advisory board, but I would take out groups of successful entrepreneurs and buy them lunch once a month and send them weekly reports of what I was doing, more to have some accountability for myself. And it was a hugely valuable experience for me and kind of shaped a lot of, now if I was starting a business, I would start with the advisory board first
Got it.
and
So
then.
effectively mentors to some extent, but you called that your kind of board of advisors.
And look, I don't think I ever asked them, and I don't think they wanted to receive my weekly reports, but I wanted to have that accountability, and it worked very well. So then sort of moved into this world of public boards and started being asked to sit on other people's boards and advising people's boards. And you very quickly realize that they're quite dysfunctional, a lot of these boards. A lot of
I
people that
love
are
this
on these boards.
conversation. I was joking, but I don't think this is a boring topic at all, because two reasons, just to segue into this. Lots of people I know who listen to this show want to become a board director or certainly sit on it. There's a mystere, a kind of like mystery thing around this, right? There's that piece. But then the other side of the coin is they're usually pretty bad. I mean, the egos that you get around some of these tables. I mean, I've left boards before because I just don't want to be around these people.
And actually that was one of my first things. So I was always considered very progressive because we always tried to have 50% women on our boards. And it wasn't because I was being progressive, it was because the egos and the cockfighting was just so dull. But if I was going to spend 2 hours in a meeting, I wanted more interesting people there. That been doing that for years and years. Just kind of realized that a lot of people are on boards for the wrong reasons, that a lot of very talented people are being overlooked for boards because they didn't know the right people, they didn't go to the right schools, they didn't look the right way or sound the right way. And so that was kind of, I was always looking at, yeah, as an entrepreneur, I love finding little pockets of talent that other people can't see, and sort of exploiting that. And so we were looking at that. And then what sort of became quite interesting over the last few years was the volume of money that has been raised for ESG funds and environmental societal governance. And one of the big criteria is you can't invest into a company that doesn't have a diverse board. And so you're kind of in this really interesting situation where companies want to access this capital. The investors want to invest in these companies, but they're insisting on diversity on the board. Now, what you'll know from your experience on boards is managing a small board is full of egos, especially public, your or any big money. There's a lot of scrutiny and there's a lot of risk, and it's difficult to manage. So the last thing anyone wants on a board is potential disruption, because that's like it's already hard enough. So if you've taken a company public and you've got sort of three people from your own business and you've got a couple of people that you've known for years, you can kind of manage that board. The idea of bringing in diversity, which you perceive as being disruption, is terrifying, and it's just not worth it.
Is that because it
And
just increases risk overall because of that? You're bringing a new dynamic into it, which, you can't necessarily control by the sheer nature of it.
yeah, absolutely. And I think that there's fear of the unknown, and the risks of bringing on a bad board member are very high. And also the consequences of bringing on a bad member are very high. Because if you say, if you're in the public markets and you bring on a board member and you do all the press releases and we're all very excited, and that board member turns out to either do nothing or worse, be very disruptive, then you either have to go back to the market and say, hey, we got this completely wrong, we've fired this board member, and markets don't like disruption in boards. Or you have to suck it up, and having a pain in the butt on the board for the next 6 years can be excruciatingly expensive. So you don't want that either. So you kind of got this situation, and it sort of explains why these boards are such closed shops and so difficult to get into. And the average tenure is 9 years, so there's not a lot of turnover.
Well, I used to see the same people be punted around as well. I mean, particularly when you get to the bigger PLCs and things like that. I mean, in private equity, it's a slightly different dynamic because you haven't got the public facing side of that. So if someone becomes a board member of a company, it's not necessarily a press release. It can be for the bigger ones, but you have the issue of two things, actually. You have the investors have such a sway that if they don't like someone, they'll just get rid of them, right? Or they'll put their own people in. Or it's such a circle jerk, right? Generally, that it's everyone's mate, right? The whole thing. The person who play golf with on the weekend or goes to the members club, they're on the board. And therefore, you don't actually get any real value from the board because the board's not doing what it's supposed to do. It's a social club.
Exactly. And this really kind of struck us when we took the first company public, and our investment bank, which obviously are kind of the gatekeepers to the market, said, yeah, everything's good. Love the business plan, love the business. Don't like your board. You need to have a few gray hairs on there. You need people that have got 10 to 20 years board
God.
experience. And there wasn't that many people out there. And so exactly what you've just described, you end up with the same people sitting on multiple boards, and it's a very nice gravy train, and they don't care about your business, and worse, they don't want you to do anything interesting or that's potentially going to jeopardize this. So they'll tend to vote down anything that's potentially controversial or entrepreneurial. So it was, yeah, that became really obvious to us that it was a very flawed system. But what's interesting is now, when you've got kind of this push for diversity on boards, and the criticism against that is, well, it's just a box ticking exercise. Like, why aren't you hiring people on merit? And to your point, nobody was being hired on merit before. We didn't hire these people on merit. We hired them because they had gray hairs and they ticked a box that the stock market wanted to see. And So, yeah, it's just a different box that needs ticking right now, but that creates an opportunity for people that have never been on boards before, and that to me is quite exciting.
Let's talk about a couple of practical things here. So firstly is, in your opinion and your experience, what does a really good constructive board look like, firstly? And then I want to talk about what sort of people should make that up, or the character. If I, let's say I wanted to join a board, or one of our listeners, what sort of things do they need to have? So let's start with the first one first. What does a great board look like in your opinion?
So this, I think, is part of the problem, because if you were to Google what does a great board look like, the only information that's out there in academia or in media is all about what a great board for a big company looks like. So everything is about good corporate governance, and you should have this committee, and you should have this committee, and all of these
And
things.
normally it's like law firms have training on it, and you have to have the audit committee here and this and whatever else. Yeah, no, I know exactly like that. It's very structured and very formal.
Incredibly structured, incredibly formal, and I'm sure from an academic standpoint, it looks brilliant on paper, and consultants get jobs, and that's all good. That's diametrically opposed to what a small business needs on the board. And this is kind of one of my big sort of, I guess, bugbears is there's courses out there that tell you to go and do like a director's certificate, and that will help you get a board seat. It won't at all. Like it's there's no board sitting there saying, "Hey, we need someone who knows the rules," because you've got board advisors, you've got lawyers. You don't need that. So, but at a big company, they're very, very focused on that. Big company board is very focused on good corporate governance. Good corporate governance in a small company is a very different game, and that's really what I've focused on is how do you add value in a small business? And that's very different. And the point that I always make is if you've got enough money, you could buy yourself a seat on any board in the world. Like eventually someone will give up. If you want to sit on the Apple board, go into the market and start buying. Eventually you'll have enough shares that you can win a vote to get yourself onto the board. In the small business world, if look at an angel investor that says they'll put in $1 million, they can buy a board seat with that. They can say, "Look, I'll put in $1 million, but I want a board seat." Just as you got said in private equity, they put in a couple of their guys. So at different levels, board members need to do different things. Often it's about access to capital. That's a huge thing. If you've got access to capital, you can add significant value. If you've got experience, when it comes to I'm obviously a big believer in having some diversity of thoughts, having people that will challenge your ideas, and I think that's very valuable. But it evolves as you move up the ladder for sure.
Got it. And it's interesting. So because I find that there's kind of like a journey as the business grows, right? So at startup phase, like you mentioned beforehand, you might even start as a coach, right? And then you might have a mentor or someone else like that. So that you've got that sort of thing. So at least you've got something around you that is external, as you said, challenging, providing advice, just seeing a different perspective of the business. 'Cause when you're in it, you're in it. It's difficult. Sort of businesses I work with that tend to be eight figure businesses, certainly working towards eight, nine figure exits. It's that type of thing. Most of them, like 80%, I would say, if I was asked a number, do not have anything. Right. Some of them are, as I said, they're big, right? They're doing eight figures. That's not a small business. And they don't even have a non-exec or an advisor or anything like that. So one of the first things we do is put that in, and then we start to structure around that. And I suppose my view of it is we look at the gaps and we look at the strategy, right? And where there are gaps in either of those two things, right? That's where we start to look for some help. And that starts to become the board, right? You might bring a finance person in if there's stuff on the numbers, someone who knows the market, someone who knows investors. But let's talk about, I know with the book that you've got coming out, The Boardroom Blueprint, a lot of that is about helping people who want to be able to join boards, but maybe don't have the confidence or don't understand that they have the skills and they have an idea. So let's talk about the person, in your opinion. What are the bare minimum things that someone has to have or learn or understand to be effective in a board position?
Yeah, so just before we go into that, I think just to echo your point, because I know you have a lot of entrepreneurs listening, and look, there's 330 million businesses worldwide. I would guess 99.5% of them, if not more, don't have a board. And that's a huge opportunity. But I also think, businesses are better when you have somebody to bounce those bounce ideas off. And so basically, to your point, what or to go back to sort of where this the book came from is I set up a company, a little side project about a year and a half ago, to help to train people and then show them not to place them on boards, but to show them how to create boards and build their positions. And it's kind of a stepping stone process. So what we suggest, and anyone can do this, is find a small business or a startup or local rugby team or anyone that needs some extra support, and go and position yourself, go and offer to build an advisory board for them, and bring in three or four of your mates, different industries, different countries, and everything can be done on Zoom now. So do think global, because it's a big world out there. And just spend a year thinking about somebody else's business. Most of us are so focused. If we're entrepreneurs, we're completely focused on our business. If we're employees, we're completely focused on the role. Just starting to think holistically about somebody else's business is actually an incredibly valuable process to go through. And you don't need to be a genius. You don't need to know all the answers. At that level, a big part of it is just asking questions and holding the CEO accountable to what they said they are doing. And maybe introducing them, being an advocate for them to other people. That's hugely valuable for a small business. So that's how we kind of get people started. And then the next phase or the next step up, and we view every board position merely as a stepping stone to the next one. So you don't want to be an unpaid advisor for the rest of your life, but you might leverage that to then go to these public companies. Now, there's step up from an advisor of a small business to a public company director is a big step. So what we created was an idea of an apprentice board. An apprentice board basically sits below the main board, sits in on all the meetings, but doesn't say anything. Now, so that they don't cost the company anything.
It's just like
There's
a
no
board observer.
votes.
In my world, we call that a board observer.
Board observer,
Okay.
exactly. But what it means is, especially if that board apprentice is a diverse group, that company can now go out to the market and to those ESG funds and say,
Ah,
hey, look how
nice.
forward thinking we are. We're taking steps to bring diversity into our board. What it means for the person that's sitting there is they get to watch what's going on. But interestingly, because the expectation of you as an apprentice is very low, whereas normally if you come into a board, you're being paid a lot of money for 2 hours a month or 2 hours every couple of months. The expectation is you're going to deliver something straight out of the box. And that's quite terrifying if you're a brand new director. If you're an apprentice, you just need to sit there, get the lie of the land, figure out where the real politics are happening, figure out how you can add value. Figure out the things that the board doesn't want to do that you could pick up, like the ESG reporting that has to be done, but nobody wants to do. Start talking to investors, which most boards are terrible at talking to investors. So if you can do that and build those relationships, that becomes incredibly valuable. At the end of that first year, the chair of that board is thinking, well, this person sat in every board meeting and they've never criticized anything we do. Must be very smart. And so,
I hope people got that. I got that.
and by the way, they've also helped us with the ESG reporting and they've brought in some new investors and they've helped us with our comms. Real simple stuff that anyone can pick up, but most board directors are too busy with other things. And so you're kind of you've got into the inner circle and you've built that trust, which makes it very easy to just be promoted onto the board at that point. And then you kind of so
The thing I
keep
like
going up.
about that, Callum, as well, is whenever we're doing assessments on businesses, as I said, they're usually sort of small mid-market, but some of them are bigger. We look at what we call two layers of succession. Now, we normally look at two layers of succession across the leadership team. But I like the idea that what you're also creating here is a succession plan to the board, which is great. So instead of having the risk, as you said beforehand, of someone new coming in, you've got someone there that you can literally promote to a role and you get to know them over time. So there's a heap of value just in that idea as well, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, it's a try before you buy. It's very sort of low risk and works on both sides. So yeah.
Got it. So if anyone's listening to this, we get a blend of different people. Sometimes there are people who are very experienced, have, you know, worked in large business, corporate or whatever else for 25 years. Sometimes there's, you know, people in the professional services industry. If they're listening to this and they're thinking, you know what, it's always been a goal of mine to join a board, to be a board advisor or board member. What do you advise them to do first? So what's the, you know, if they were going to try and get into this world, what's the first thing they should do?
Oh, just pick up a copy of my book.
Well, of course. Besides that, because we're calling it the blueprint, right? So it's going to have the step by step, I expect.
Sure. look, I think part of it's actually relatively easy once you know. So we have, I talk about five components in the book to kind of go on this board journey. The first one is connections. So building your connections, actually being, most of us are fairly organic with the way we build connections. You need to start being quite deliberate, connecting with people that are already on boards. The second piece is knowledge. If you haven't started to look at kind of what goes on with board governance, understanding where, you know, key themes like ESG or diversity, you need to start getting a bit of awareness of that. You don't need to be an expert in these areas, but you do need to be able to speak the language, be able to read a balance sheet, that kind of stuff. The third one is profile. Just starting to change your profile from whatever you're currently known for to start saying, and this is where joining an advisory board is really interesting. We do with our members at the Veblen Group, within 30 to 60 days, we want all of them to have joined an advisory board. And one of the primary reasons is that the minute they do it, they update their LinkedIn profile. And they say, now I'm sitting on the board of XYZ company. And what happens is, without exception, that's the most popular posts they ever have in their lives, like the amount of comments and congratulations. But what it does is that your entire network starts to view you in a completely different light. You're now not Nick the IT guy, you're sitting on a board. So clearly somebody values you in a strategic level that hasn't happened before. And yeah, actually just got from one of my team, sent me one of our members, Olu Fwemi in South Africa. He joined, posted on LinkedIn that he'd joined the program, not even that he'd joined the board, and immediately got approached by a nonprofit. Within 6 days, he had been offered a position on this nonprofit. And they just hadn't thought of him as somebody that was doing that. And once they did, they thought, oh, he would be great. And so he announced that he had now joined this nonprofit. And 2 weeks after that, he was offered and on the board of another company as well. So it's amazing. And what you realize is that those three things, knowledge, connections, and profile, you actually realize if you play it right, you can get lots and lots of offers very quickly. The next two are the bits that people neglect, which is the value and the leverage. And the value is, okay, you've got a board seat. Now, how do you become a great board member? So you're not just sitting there, you're not sitting there for the coffee and the biscuits, but you're actually contributing, you're actually adding real value. And to do that, you need to kind of start thinking about business in a much bigger sense than most people have ever had to do before. But first steps is get yourself, and actually one of the things that I talk about in the program and in the book is never apply for a board seat.
I agree with that.
I think this is because, maybe it's because I come from an entrepreneurial background, like the idea of applying for something like and being handled by an HR manager just sends shivers up my spine. It's like it's out of my control. I'm not interested in it.
So you go. I've got a story to tell you in a sec.
Well, I was just going to say, but like in a board position, you shouldn't be applying. You shouldn't be going through that. It's a partnership, really, and so you want to be talking level. And this is why I like the idea of don't apply for a board position, create a board position. Go and find a company that doesn't have one. go and invite three or four people to sit on it with you. Now, those three or four people now owe you a favor because you've got them a board position as well. It's a great way to reach out to people you want to reach out to and build those connections. So,
yeah, indeed. Yeah. So we'll wrap up in a second, but I'll just share a story because I think it's interesting. So I sit on four boards now, and I'll explain kind of my view of that and what I've learned from that. But when I was transitioning from private equity, I applied for one board. Right, never ever again will I apply for a board. So it was literally like a LinkedIn thing or something like that, or it might have been on one of the more illustrious recruiter websites, you know, like an Odgers or something like that. But either way, I got through and had an interview, and it literally was an interview with the founder. First and foremost, the business was tiny and it was positioned as not. And instead of it just being what I thought it would be, like, as you said, a partnership, a chat, like, you know, I'm coming to bring some experience. I've been in PE for a long time. You've got this business. I'm effectively going to come and advise and mentor. But it was one of the most shocking sort of top down kind of interviews I've ever had in my life. It was as if I was being interviewed to join as the junior kind of to make the coffees. and it got to a point, like, I shared this because it's music. I actually said, this interview's over. Or this conversation's over, or something like that, within about 10 minutes. And the guys, this is very unprofessional. And I'm like, man, like, you if you think you're going to get anyone of quality and experience, and this is how the process is going to run, you're not going to do it. So I share that story because it was interesting. But just to sort of say, like, back to how do you sort of find your lane, right, or become valuable? What I've found for me is it's a balance between my background and expertise. Right. So whenever I come into a business, I'm normally advising on capital markets, private equity, how they can exit. So I bring that as my kind of lane. But the other thing is I get myself in multiple rooms, right, as a student of the game. So it doesn't matter what that room is to some extent, but I'm always out there learning. And you'd be surprised how many times, you know, someone spoke on stage or I've been in this room and someone said something. I've used that nugget of information in a board situation. Because I'm always out there trying to learn myself. And just, again, I'd be interested in your view on that, but that's something that certainly served me over the last few years since I've been doing more of this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think a big distinction is that your lane is a deep understanding of business and business growth. A lot of people who think they want to be board members and start applying for board members basically think that they're going to be a consultant. And so I get emails every day from people saying, hey, look, I've been in the supply chain for 20 years. I want to join your board and I can tell you all about supply chain. Well, look, if we needed supply chain help, we would hire somebody. Like, that's not what the board does. The board has to be thinking holistically about the business. And so, again, this is why we sort of say start off at the bottom. And actually, a lot of the value can just be your connections. You know, one connection, and we have one of our members, 70 years old, watched my webinar, contacted me, said, look, this sounds great, but I'm 70 years old. Am I too old for this? And I said, no, he had great experience. So I said, no, come in and give it a try. He got a advisory board position within a week. And within 3 months, he had three advisory positions. One of them, he said to that company, look, if I can take your revenue from here to here, can I have a slice of the equity and can I have a slice of the revenue? And they were like, yeah, absolutely. That's more than happy to do that. And he's great. Let me introduce you to my best friend. And his best friend ran a huge F&B business in the US and
oh, wow,
basically
I love it.
Do a deal like that. But everyone came out of it a winner. And so, yeah, you're if you don't yet feel you have all of the sort of knowledge that you would have, for example, or somebody that's been in sort of entrepreneurship or business for a long time, you actually probably still have a valuable network, even if you don't know it yet, but people that you could introduce that, can
absolutely.
There's other ways you can add value.
And you've brought up a kind of a final point around remuneration and things like that there, which I think is interesting just to talk about briefly, because I found you can become very creative. Like, I love what you said there about, like, if I'm going to introduce my network, if I'm going to if I see something that you haven't seen and you win and I win, right? So rev shares or whatever else, or certainly equity, being a board advisor and being, you know, arguably a professional board member can be very lucrative, extremely lucrative. And how do you advise on that? I mean, obviously you advise that first you've got to get the experience, but when it starts to become that commercial conversation, how do you advise on that with your members?
Yeah, look, I think the biggest thing for people to get their heads around is agreeing to work for free. And I keep pointing out, it's not for free, it's for credibility. Like, you're doing this to get the experience, to get the, build your profile. But then, yeah, so the commercial element kind of comes down to your experience and how confident you are delivering value. And so what I do say is, look, if you've never done anything like this before and you're sitting on your first startup advisory board, don't try and get clever with coming up with deals, because you don't know that you can create the value. You know, if you or I got invited to join a board, we wouldn't even look at it unless we were clear how we could add value, and then we'd figure out, okay, well, there's a way we can monetize this in one way or another. Not trying to run before you can walk. And these things don't need to take a huge amount of time, but they do need to progress in the right order. Otherwise, you're really kind of going to be struggling to add value and get compensated for it.
Indeed. And it's good to have the guide rails around how to do that successfully, which you've covered in your book. So let's finish there. I mean, we've covered a heap today. This is great. As I said, I'm glad you got you on to talk about this, because we could have talked about other stuff you've done. It would have been equally as fun. But the boardroom thing hasn't been touched on. And I have this, my most popular episode of the show is called The 15 Reasons Why You Won't Sell Your Business to a Sophisticated Buyer, effectively like private equity. And one of the 15 things is having a board in place before you go through an exit process, and the value that that drives, because you're going to get a board put on you straight away as soon as you sell to private equity. The more that you can show that you can, as the business owner, the entrepreneur, operate in that environment, the less risk, et cetera, et cetera. So very good. All right. Yeah. So the book is called The Boardroom Blueprint. When's it coming out, Colin?
The book is called Boardroom Blueprint. It is coming out on April the 11th. So I'm not sure when this comes out. We will do a page with an opportunity for your readers to get a free digital copy of it.
Okay, perfect.
For launch or after launch or something. Awesome. Along those lines.
Okay, and if people want to reach out as well and just talk about your program, what's the program called, and how can they get in touch with you about that?
Program's called Veblen Director Program. Best place is LinkedIn. LinkedIn, or actually with some of our members put some good videos up on YouTube. But yeah, find me on LinkedIn. I think I'm the only Callum Lang. Veblen Director Program, if you want.
Perfect. And you might find some crazy videos of this old private equity hack in there talking about stuff.
Yeah, we've got some good videos floating around now.
They do look great. Well, listen, Callum, it's been great getting you on the show finally. I want to wish you all the very best with the book and the program and stuff like that. And it's great having you part of the Scale Up community and all the value that you're adding to entrepreneurs and business owners across the world. So on behalf of them and me, thank you for coming on today. Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of Scale Up with Nick Bradley. If you enjoy the show just as much as I enjoy creating it for you, then I'd really appreciate you leaving a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts. And while you're there, why not subscribe to the channel so you never miss a future episode? It really helps me, it helps the show, plus it makes it easier for others to access the content that I'm producing week in and week out. And finally, if you want more information about anything you heard in today's show, or to find out how you can get more help in scaling up your business and your life, click the link in the show notes now to learn about our coaching, mentoring, and mastermind programs. See you soon.